protecting us against police violence and hate crimes. This peaceful protest outside a county courthouse calls for justice for those lost to police violence and hate crimes. Again, that's the Feet to the Fire campaign and protest this month, Saturday, August 11th at 10 a.m. at the Multnomah County Courthouse, 1021 Southwest 4th Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
What does it mean to be called crazy in a crazy world? Listen to Madness Radio, Voices and Visions from Outside Mental Health. Sponsored by the Icarus Project and Portland Hearing Voices, Madness Radio can be heard on KBOO-FM, the Pacifica Network, and online at madnessradio.net. Welcome to Madness Radio. This is your host, Will Hall. Today, my guest is Sabrina Louise. Sabrina is an educator of vegan cuisine. She's a food and water activist and works for the Unitarian Universalist Ministry for Earth. Sabrina is based in Portland, Oregon, and is one of the founding members of Rethinking Psychiatry. Today, we're going to be talking about sane vegan transition. So thank you for joining me on Madness Radio, Sabrina Louise.
Thanks for having me.
So you and I have known each other for a long time through your work for mental health system reform in Portland, Oregon, through the group Rethinking Psychiatry. And so it's great to have you. Great to have you on the show.
Thanks so much for having me. It's a great opportunity to be here with you today, Will.
Yeah. Now I should start out by saying that, you know, even though right now I am working myself on a transition to a whole food plant-based diet or a vegan diet, I'm not an advocate for veganism. I'm an advocate for people eating the food that works for them. So I want to start out, Sabrina, with asking you, why is it that your interest in food and nutrition got you involved with this mental health reform group? Why were you involved in founding Rethinking Psychiatry, which has done great work in Portland, Oregon, and the whole region? Why is it that that was connected with food for you?
Aside from my own journey of discovering a whole foods plant-based diet, and in terms of really helping to support my physical health and well-being, I picked up a book called Food and Behavior by Barbara Stitz. And as a probation officer in Orange County, California, she really blew my mind wide open about how deeply our food choices can affect our behavior in terms of stabilizing blood sugar, in terms of our metabolism, in terms of having literally psychotic breaks from too much casein, which is the primary protein in dairy, too much sugar, lack or deficiency in certain vitamins, et cetera, et cetera. And it really got me to thinking, I've always kind of been opposed to psychotropic or antidepressive, not to say that those things don't work for some people and not to say that they should be eliminated altogether in all circumstances, but I'm really a fan of if I can make small gradual changes in my own life, in what I consume and put into my body and build my cells with, if I can make every bite count nutritionally, I only see benefit from that. I only see improvement, maybe not 100% reversal of certain things, but certainly I have seen it with my own eyes. I've experienced it myself. And I really felt that the mental health reform and community in Oregon and in the world could really benefit from a healthier, more nutrient-dense plant-based diet.
Yeah, and there are a number of studies that have been done. For example, people with a schizophrenia diagnosis, there have been some studies that show that they often have a higher rate of gluten sensitivity or gluten allergy.
I think one thing that's important to note, too, about the gluten topic is that anytime we remove something that we are often eating, you know, 6 to 10 servings a day. And many of those things, waffles, pancakes, cereal, sandwiches, pie, cake, pasta, garlic bread, those things, pizza, they also accompany sauces and syrups and things that have sugar, as well as dairy, which has casein in it. And so by eliminating gluten, we're also eliminating a lot of those things that we're also eating 6 to 10 times a day, and reducing that amount of inflammatory consumption can make a huge difference.
So the sugar and casein add to inflammation in the body? Is that part of the question about them?
Yes, gluten, sugar, and casein are all not anti-inflammatory. So if you are trying to reduce the amount of inflammation in your body, whether it's physical in your joints, whether it's arthritis in your hands, whether it's mental health, whether it's eczema, psoriasis, chronic dermatitis, other ways that our bodies become inflamed through the skin, there's a lot of inflammatory responses that are directly linked to inflammatory foods.
One of the things I learned recently is there's something about cheese, about cow cheese, that is directly addictive to brain chemistry. Is that right? What can you tell us about that? Because that really surprised me, but it related to my own cravings around wanting cheese so much.
One reason that most people don't consider or think about is the umami part of cheese, in the sense that cheese in many cases is cultured, it's aged over time, and anytime we have organic matter that is in a state of decomposition, it's releasing something called L-glutamate or glutamate, which is different than gluten, but it is observed and experienced physically in our body by a part of our tongue that addresses the umami taste, which is the fifth taste that we have on our tongue. And because people crave umami and they don't necessarily recognize the sources that they're getting umami from, they maybe don't realize that not only are they physically addictive to cheese, but they're also craving the umami that they certainly can get from plant-based cheeses or other sources.
So this is really important for a sane transition, because often people will move in the direction of a vegan diet and they'll just won't feel satisfied. They'll be like, oh, I just really want that. Then it becomes, I need it. I must have this. And what you're saying is there actually is a taste called umami, which we don't actually usually know much about, but it's a craving that we can have for this taste. And that once you understand that, okay, oh, what I want is the umami, then you can think about, okay, how do I transition to getting umami not from animal sources, but from other sources, like fried onions is an example of umami, or sun-dried tomatoes is another example, very delicious source of umami.
Yes, actually any kind of tomato, once a tomato actually leaves its plant host, it's in a constant state of decomposition. And so when we eat tomatoes or cook them and break them down into tomato sauce or sun-dry them, the sun-dried tomatoes or the tomato paste. Tomato paste is exceptionally high in umami. There's actually an umami meter or a counter, if you will, I believe online somewhere. You can just Google umami counter that will actually tell you what types of foods are high in umami. And that can help you incorporate a little bit of umami into your diet as you're transitioning.
So if you're transitioning to veganism and you don't want to go for the bacon or the melted cheese sandwich, what are some other umami sources that you might go for instead?
You might go for miso, nutritional yeast, cultured vegetables, kimchi, sauerkraut, any kind of fungus.
You're making me hungry there. This sounds sounds delicious.
Any kind of fungus, any kind of mushroom. Basically, mushrooms are in a constant state of decomposition.
Yeah, fried portobello mushroom sandwich. That sounds pretty good.
There you go. Tempeh is also a cultured product, so it's also in the constant state of decomposition. But there are other vegetables too that have a fair amount of umami in them. Maybe not as high as some of the others that I mentioned, but certainly mm-hmm. potatoes, carrots, mm-hmm. Various different vegetables that have some umami. So as long as you're kind of incorporating that into all of your foods, you can certainly get enough.
But I wanted to continue to talk about, you know, why people might be considering a transition to veganism. And there's a whole second domain, which is about ethics, that there are ethical reasons. The effects, of course, that eating animals and the animal industry has on animal suffering, and then also the other ethical considerations. So tell us a little bit about that reasoning for becoming a vegan.
Well, it's interesting because there's a lot of cross sectionality when we think about injustices and oppression and marginalized people, when we think about racism and sexism and classism, when we think about consent culture, and, you know, we categorize that certain species or certain animals are ethically justified in receiving industry standard body modifications without anesthesia. Things that if we did to a dog or a cat, we could likely be thrown in jail. But for whatever reason, a pig, which is a super intelligent, sentient being, we can do horrific things to pigs. And it's industry standard. Even the happiest, quote unquote, happiest pigs on the happiest farms or the happiest hens in the happiest barns still have to go through industry standard body modification. So, and then there's the ethical part of biodiversity. When we're talking about other animals that are considered wildlife and the encroachment of domesticated animals that we breed into existence, you know, the rights are with the owners of land, with the cattle ranchers, and not with the wolves and the cougars and the bears and the wild mustangs that encroach on the grasslands that cattle ranchers want for their cattle or for their other game or animals. So there's, you know, there's that ethical distinction. There's also the people that we are paying to do violence onto animals every day. And those people talk about mental health problems.
You're talking about the workers in factory farms.
The workers in factory farms and slaughterhouses, the people who are working on ranches. You know, these animals are truly suffering and they are crying out in pain. And at some point you have to desensitize and almost separate your intuitive heart and compassion in order to do this work. And many of these people are people in marginalized communities, people who live in poverty. Environmental racism is another part of the equation. Many of these people are immigrants, undocumented workers, threats of deportation, people who work in slaughterhouses, people who work in those industries. Often get very few breaks. They're on their feet for long hours at a time. It's physically and emotionally and mentally taxing work. And there's threats of sexual assault and sexual violence as well. This is documented. You can go to foodispower.org. The Food Empowerment Project has a lot of statistics on these workers and who is actually doing this work for individuals choosing to support these industries.
So this is so the ethical position is about the rights of the animals to not suffer and be controlled in the way that they are, and also the rights of the workers in these industries. It's affecting their well-being and also their mental health.
Yes, yes, as well as in terms of population being fed and the amount of and this sort of goes a little bit creeping into the environmental reasons for doing this, but ethically, if you feel strongly that fresh, clean food and water should be accessible to all people of the world, but the vast majority of the food and the water that we have available and accessible is actually going to animals that are intentionally bred into existence and then killed to produce a very small amount of food for typically more privileged people in the world, that's kind of a problem if you've got all these other people who are perfectly fine eating a plant-based diet, but are unable to have access to safe food and fresh water. So that kind of creeps into the environmental racism part of it.
Well, this is something we don't hear about that much, that there's also a very strong environmental reason for moving away from animal-based food and animal-based agriculture. So give us kind of a picture of what are the environmental concerns, because I know this is also part of your work. What are the environmental concerns with eating animals?
So there's, you know, air pollution, fecal matter in the air from hog farms, groundwater contamination can cause toxicity in people's bodies drinking from their wells. That also kind of leaches out into the wider water systems and contributes to toxic zones in the ocean, algae blooms, deforestation.
And the other thing is that there's a big connection between animal agriculture and the climate change issue.
Yes, between the carbon and the methane that the cows produce. It's astronomical. It's more than all transportation combined, because there's just that many animals that we're breeding into existence. And all of the fossil fuels that are directly connected to the growth, slaughter, processing, packaging, transportation, delivery. And there's an amazing documentary called Cowspiracy that really goes into depth over the environmental consequences of animal agriculture.
So let's talk about this transition and how to address some of the things. The first thing that I think that comes up for people is that, okay, I'm not eating meat, I'm not eating animal products, and I feel weak. What would you say to that?
I would question how many calories they're consuming. I would question whether or not they're consuming complex carbohydrates, because that's where we get our energy from.
Let's start with the calories thing, because I think this is a trap that I got into. If you are eating animal products, then you can get a certain amount of calories from a certain volume of food. If you go to plant products, you need larger volume of food. So if you just stop eating animal products, but you're eating the same amount of food as plant products, you're probably reducing your calories. And ironically, if you reduce your calorie input, you might feel better for a few days because, you know, constricting your calories actually can give you some energy. But long term, it's a recipe for disaster because you don't have the energy that you need. So the problem that people might be experiencing with weakness isn't with the vegan food versus the animal food. It's actually the number of calories that they're getting.
I would also say that it's quality versus quantity. So not all plant-based food is created equal. I mean, you can be, obviously you can eat a plant-based diet and not be very healthy because you could eat Pringles and Twizzlers and that's not.
I think it's one of the reasons why people are preferring whole foods plant-based diet to veganism, because veganism just means not eating animal products. So you could eat junk food all day.
Actually, veganism is a lot more than that.
Well,
One distinguishing factor. I think that if you are choosing to wear the identity of vegan, then you are accepting and following the notion that you're doing it for health, environmental, and ethical reasons. And I would say that an idea that veganism is a trend is less accurate than I would say that a plant-based diet is a trend. Because once you go vegan and once you wake up to the suffering that animals and people have to endure based on animal agriculture, it's very easy for you to decide that that's not something that you want to actually contribute to once you actually make that decision. And it's hard to go back. It's hard to go back to doing it even once in a while because it's so in your face that's when you end up kind of wearing that or self-identifying as vegan. But a plant-based diet is something that anyone can try for a while, see if it works for them, be flexible with. You can say, I eat primarily a plant-based diet, or you can, you know, explore other types of diets, pescatarian, which certainly is not vegetarian and it's not vegan. it is pescatarian. I eat fish and lots of vegetables. Fantastic. You're helping the world and yourself by doing that. And certainly not every diet is going to work for people. Plus, it's really good to eat by color, to incorporate as much color, natural color in your foods as possible. So
what about supplements in general thing? I mean, I know people often recommend B vitamins, people often recommend vitamin D. Those are things that everybody can benefit from. What would be your recommendation in terms of the supplements that people might want to take?
I would definitely recommend, if you're not already taking a multivitamin daily that incorporates vitamin D and vitamin B12, I would recommend getting individual supplements for each of those.
What are some other examples of substitution? Someone who's craving this might actually be able to get satisfied from something else that's plant-based.
Well, I think a lot of people really are because they're already struggling with the gluten issue, and they're really missing pasta. And so I just wanted to put a plug in for kelp noodles. These are noodles that are made entirely from kelp, which is a sea vegetable. They're mineral rich. They're low in carbohydrates. They're low in calories, if that's a concern for you. They're fat free. They're free of all allergens. Like, you can't actually be allergic to kelp. They have a very neutral taste. So they're sort of like tofu in the sense that they absorb up like a sponge the flavors of the things that you want to pair with them. So pesto sauce or a spicy peanut sauce, for example, could get mixed up with kelp noodles. And while just plain, they're very crunchy and cellulose-like. But the longer they sit with any sauce, be it Alfredo sauce or pesto or that spicy peanut sauce, the more that they absorb up the liquid in the sauce and become more and more al dente, like pasta, like regular glutinous pasta. Sort of like zucchini noodles, which you can certainly make with a spiralizer. But I just find that everyone really loves the kelp noodles. They may not know initially what to do with them, but you don't even have to cook them. You just toss them with a sauce. And certainly there are already store-bought sauces that you can buy, but you can make your own. And they're just really fantastic, but most importantly, they're nutrient dense. They still, they keep a line in alignment with that whole making every bite count nutritionally.
Sabrina, do you have one or two recipes that you want to share? I mean, I know one of my favorites is very simple, but for breakfast, I'll eat oatmeal or polenta, and I'll add a little bit of raisins, and then in the bowl, I'll have my pumpkin seeds, I might have some almonds, or I might have some coconut, shredded coconut, or I might have some chia, and that's a very sustainable way to start my day. What are some recipes that you want to share with us?
Yes, I actually, great that you mentioned that. I love that you can take 2 tablespoons of chia seeds in a little jelly jar and maybe a tablespoon of shelled hemp seeds, and add some mashed banana and a spoonful of almond butter or peanut butter, and top it off with your favorite non-dairy milk, and shake it up vigorously and put it in the fridge. And the next morning, you have this amazing chia seed pudding, banana peanut butter concoction. You can crumble some walnuts in there if you like. It's so delicious. And you can use any kind of fresh fruit. You can add jam or jelly. You can put all kinds of different maple syrup. I've experimented with using leftover cereal in the jar as well, like puffed kamut or puffed rice, grape nuts. Just really, really great to kind of, as a way to kind of utilize what's left over in your fridge. Another one of my favorite things, and right now I'm totally hooked on it, is Hungarian mushroom stew. So everybody who likes mushrooms and who really appreciates a rich and thick and creamy kind of mushroom stew is really going to love yellow potatoes, any kind of mushroom, and leeks combined with coconut milk or coconut cream, a little bit of lemon pepper, some salt and pepper, and a tad of smoked paprika. I have recently added some asparagus in with that kind of mixture. and have gotten a very thick, creamy, umami rich. The beauty of the yellow potatoes versus the russet ones are that the yellow potatoes really break down into mush. And the leeks, when you slice them and clean them in a bowl of water and then drain off that water and put them in a pan with a little bit of olive oil and those diced potatoes, they also break down into a very mild tasting onion mush that becomes really the heart of the mushroom stew. And the coconut milk or coconut cream tops it off and makes it very creamy. And you can have any amount of any of those ingredients and still make a fantastic soup.
What are some resources that you would point people to, like are there books or websites or places that you would suggest that people go if they're interested in learning more about this and how to make their own transition to a more vegan or plant-based diet in a sane and sustainable way?
Well, I certainly love Colleen Patrick Goudreau's Compassionate Cooks and Joyful Vegan websites. She has a podcast called Food for Thought, and it really covers a lot of topics, not only about food preparation, but what to do in certain instances, how to talk to family and friends and loved ones about certain topics. I find really a lot of the information that she shares in both of her podcasts as being very useful, particularly to first-time adventurers, shall we call them. She also writes a number of books, Color Me Vegan, The Vegan Table, lots of cookbooks. I would mention Minimalist Baker. Minimalistbaker.com is a website where you can find pretty much any recipe veganized and usually gluten-free. In fact, I think always gluten-free. It's really a fantastic online resource for recipes that I recommend.
Sabrina, we don't have a lot of time left. Give us the contact information if people want to get in touch with you and find out more about your work. And I know you also sometimes offer classes. And how can people get in touch with you?
You can find me at sabbylou, sabbylou at gmail.com. That's my email. Feel free to email me. And I'm in the process of putting together a website, which will be sabbylou.com.
Sabrina Louise, thank you so much for joining us today on Madness Radio.
Thanks so much for having me, Will.
You've been listening to an interview with Sabrina Louise. Sabrina is an educator of vegan cuisine, a food and water activist, and works for the Unitarian Universalist Ministry for Earth. She's based in Portland, Oregon, where she was one of the founding members of Rethinking Psychiatry. That's all the time we have on Madness Radio. Thanks for tuning in. You've been listening to Madness Radio, voices and visions from outside mental health. Madness Radio is sponsored by the Icarus Project and Portland Hearing Voices. Host is Will Hall and producer is Nina Packabush. Madness Radio can be heard on KBOO-FM and the Pacifica Network, and shows are archived online at madnessradio.net.
KBOO Community Radio is 50. We are celebrating our birthday with a big street fair and party on August 11th from noon to 10 p.m. here at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland, Oregon.
We'll be broadcasting live bands all day and have an open house celebrating 50 years of KBOO.
There will be a reunion from 2 to 5 during the street party for folks looking to see KBOO volunteers from other eras.
So save the date, Saturday, August 11th, to celebrate the 50 years of KBOO with your community radio station. KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Call Mr. Robeson on Friday, August 10th at 7:30 p.m. at the Community Music Center in Portland. Call Mr. Robeson is a play that portrays African-American actor and singer Paul Robeson's remarkable life, highlighting his pioneering and heroic political activism. Features Old Man River and other famous songs, much fiery oratory, and a defiant testimony to the House Un-American Activities Committee. Again, that's Call Mr. Robeson on Friday, August 10th at 7:30 p.m. at the Community Music Center, 3350 Southeast Francis Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Says I, but Joe, you're 10 years dead. I never died, says he.
This is Roxanne Dunbar-Ortiz, and this is KBOO Portland.
And you are tuned to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM. It is 12 o'clock, and it's time now for the Noontime Jamboree.